Hey guys, Raf here from the Endgame Investor, and this interview was actually recorded a few weeks ago with CEO of Silver 47, Galen McNamara. They are a sponsor. At the time, he was the CEO of Suma Silver, which has since merged with Silver 47, and now Galen is the CEO of the combined company. They have assets in Alaska as their primary asset, and Nevada as well, and one other state in the US. I do own shares in Silver 47. The importance of these companies will become apparent, I believe, in the end game, obviously. So, as I believe the assets, which are now exploration assets, will rise in value as the entire world suddenly realizes that gold and silver are money by market forces, they will realize this. And these companies become very attractive for those other miners that have a lot of capital with which to acquire new assets. There really is no other way for these companies to become known other than through channels like this one and others. I do not take more than one sponsor at a time on this channel. I try not to overload it, but I do believe that the ones that I pick are responsible and they are administered by people that are trustworthy. So if you are interested in silver facing companies, that is the primary silver miners or primary silver explorers, then take a listen to this interview. And if you're interested in the company, then it's your decision whether to invest or not. In any case, here is Galen McNamara of Silver 47. Enjoy. Hey guys, Raf here from the Endgame Investor, and I've got the incoming CEO of Silver 47, the current CEO of Suma Silver on the line. This is Galen McNamara, and he's got assets in Alaska, Nevada, and New Mexico. We're going to talk to him about why he's in the silver business, silver breaking through to 38 today, could break through $40 anytime now. We know how volatile this thing is. How he got into the silver business and what is going on with Silver 47 slash Suma Silver. There's a merger involved. There's a lot of ounces in the ground here and a lot of potential. So we're going to talk about all that and what to look out as shareholders. So Galen, how are you doing today? How do you feel today that silver broke through 38? Do you think this is a dream come true, or is this just, normal?
Well, you know what, Rafi, the best is yet to come. Let's put it that way. And thanks for having me on the show. I just got a notification on my phone before we signed on that said SILJ was at a new high. So things are looking great, and I hope everyone's feeling well.
The first thing I wanted to know is how did you get into this business of digging silver out of the ground? It's very obscure, especially these days when everybody thinks silver sucks and it's not money anymore and who needs it?
Yeah, you know what? To start from the very beginning, I'm a geologist, going back, well, geez, almost 20 years now, and I've always been focused on exploration. But I'm Canadian, so I started my career looking in different places in Canada for different metals. I started in copper and zinc, looked quite a lot at uranium, have a lot of experience in uranium, but I was always from the beginning, I'm really quite interested in precious metals. I used to stake claims and do stuff like that when I was still in school. Never really made any money, but at least I learned something. And then you know what? I first got interested in these old silver districts probably around 2010 when I did a trip to Nevada when I was still a student, or maybe when I was very, very, very pretty much right after I finished school, excuse me, where I did this trip to Nevada and we got to see all these mines in action. And I just thought to myself, geez, like I just saw a lot of opportunities. So I kept that in my mind and I had seen discoveries like Silvercrest. And I had read a lot of Peter McGaugh's work from his discoveries in Mexico and his accounts of those discoveries and how they happened. And it just planted a seed. So fast forward to about 2019. Late 2019, I was looking for projects. I'm looking to put a new company together, build a new exploration vehicle, and came across this thing in Nevada in the eastern half of the Tonopah Mining District, and that's our Hughes property today, where it was this old Wild West mining place that, prolific historic silver producer, but hadn't really seen much or any modern exploration. And a little bit of a light bulb went off for me there, and I thought, Okay, well, I think with a modern approach, with all the tools we have now that they didn't have 100 years ago, and ideas, there's a pretty good chance we could be successful here. So, pulled the trigger on that project, and then staked a bunch of claims along strike, the eastern extension of that district, because you may have heard that the best place to find a new mine is right next to an old mine. It's just under that principle, and it
Yeah.
was open ground, which surprised me. And fast forward to today, we've built out, a decent sized resource on that project. And we've made some new discoveries on those claims that, were staked. So, that was a nice proof of concept and a nice discovery success that's going to be ongoing for the next amount of time. And yeah, that more or less takes us to today, Rafi.
Is there any like systemic excitement going on in the mining sector and the exploration sector now that you didn't see in 2021? I remember 2021 was like a little bit more feverish for silver explorers, and I haven't seen that lately. Also in 2011, but now silver has gone from what was it, 25 to now $38, and it still seems kind of subdued. Is that what you're still seeing now, or are you seeing some kind of pickup in interest and money flows? And if not, when do you think that's going to happen?
I think we're, yes, all of those things, the waves in 2010, 2011, the wave in 2020, 2021, maybe a little bit into 2022. We're starting to see that now, and we're starting to see the window open for investors saying, hey, we want to take silver really seriously again. And a lot of that's driven by not just by, the monetary nature of the metal, but by new industrial demand. That we've been hearing about it for the past few years, especially the solar stuff, the increased solar demand, substantial increased solar demand. But I haven't really felt like it's been taken that seriously, until recently. And that's been building over the last several months. But I think perhaps more importantly, we can look back through the last month or two here, and we've seen money flow into the sector. And companies are financing, and companies are starting to think big about exploration. And I think that's just the start. I hope it's just the start. We all kind of just focus on what we can control as CEOs. At least I try to. But my feeling here is that it's coming in waves over the last little while. It'll continue to happen in waves. It won't be straight up, but all signs point to the fact that we're in the start of a cycle.
What assets do you have? What needs to be developed? What's the business plan? And what's the general timeline here?
Yeah, so what we're doing right now is Silver 47 and Suma Silver, of which I'm the CEO, are moving towards closing and a merger that we announced a couple months ago. We're targeting close for very early August, so say 3 4 weeks away from now. And the idea is that we'll have three American high grade silver facing assets that total ounce endowment is 237 million. Inferred ounces on the silver equivalent basis at over 300 grams per ton. And then an additional 10 million indicated ounces, also at over 300 grams per ton silver equivalent, excuse me. So, hey, like if you look at our valuation on a per ounce basis relative to our peers, we're very, very undervalued. And that information is on our deck and our website. I don't have the exact numbers right in front of my face, but many of our peers on a per ounce basis on the ground, in the ground, get 2 to 3 times our valuation or more. So that's one interesting part of this company. But of course, we're not just going to sit here and say, okay, we're undervalued relative to our peers and silver's hot, so therefore buy our stock. Like that's just not, that doesn't make too much sense. So what we're also doing is really aggressively advancing our assets. We are drilling right now at Red Mountain in Alaska, stepping out from around the deposit so we can grow it, one hole at a time. There's great growth potential on the projects in Nevada and New Mexico, which also host significant numbers of ounces that we can, very, very easily get back to and plan to in the not too distant future once we get our feet under us in Alaska a little bit more. So that's it. Like it's number one, we're very undervalued relative to our peers. Number two, it's aggressive growth, from, the team, looking to grow those ounces. And number three, hey, look, like we don't just want to sit back and say, okay, we just did our transaction, our merger, and stop there. We're also looking for additional partners who may think the same way that we do. And hey, we're at around 250 million silver equivalent ounces now. How do we get to 500? How do we get to 1 billion? In the high grade environment, in good jurisdictions, we're keeping our options open, but we think now is the time to really build, the next silver company for the 21st century.
Okay, so about jurisdiction, I want to ask you a question about that. There's pluses and minuses, advantages and disadvantages to every jurisdiction. How I assume the general outlines of this is these things are is that America would be safe jurisdictionally, but I would assume that because of regulation, because everything is so cluttered legislatively in America, that it costs more red tape and time and aggravation to actually get a mine started in America, whereas maybe in some African country it's easier, but then it's more dangerous, and that's the perception. And Mexico is maybe somewhere in the middle. Can you tell us about how you think of these things? What are the advantages and disadvantages of these American mines, and why did you pick America over, let's say, Mexico or Africa?
Yeah, that's like it's a definitely, I totally agree with you. It's like pros and cons of every place. But the first thing I'm asking myself right now is like, are we looking in places where property rights matter? Right. And
That's like the big,
like,
it's a very good
right.
question. Yeah.
And I think the United States, like, that's like the top of that list, right? I think that's pretty fair to say it is the top of that list. But I mean, where you are in each jurisdiction matters. So, we're looking in Alaska, in Nevada, and New Mexico. And even where you are in each of those states also matters. Like I wouldn't want to build, if I'm in Nevada and it's always in the top three of jurisdictions, I probably wouldn't try to build a mine right beside Las Vegas or Reno. That might not go over too well, right? So where you are matters. And also the type of property that, the type of land that you own matters and where it is. Is it private property or is it public lands? And on our projects in the lower 48 in Nevada and New Mexico, where all the ounces are, or where the vast majority of the ounces are, I should say, is actually private property. So it really comes down to that. And we also want to work in places where, like, environmental standards are good, where labor standards are good, that matters. So does that take a little bit more time on permitting? Does it cost a bit more money to hire good people? Yes. But we think on the balance that that's worth it.
So what does mining on a private on a private on private land versus public land, how does that affect the regulation and the permitting process?
Yeah.
Does it cut how much does it cut time?
It's really hard to say, like, Davis, okay, it's going to cut X amount of years off, but I'll use Nevada as an example. When we're drilling on private land there, we don't even need a permit. We can just show up and build our drill pads and start drilling. And coming from Canada, for me personally, like, that was, 5 years ago, that was a little bit surprising. So it's things like that. The permitting timelines are just shorter. There's not a there's simplified permitting tracks, that will definitely save X amount of years.
So your primary resource, I understand, is in Alaska right now. That's the one that's getting the most attention and the most work.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so tell me about that specific project, and what are the steps that you want to see happen in, let's say, the next 2, 3 years, and how does that affect the company? When can you start producing, generally speaking? I know you can't give me a specific timeline, but like, what's your aim here, broadly speaking?
Yeah, so the project in Alaska is called Red Mountain. It's not to get too technical and get too far into the geology of it, but it's a sulfide deposit that's similar to something like Greens Creek or maybe an Eskay Creek, if we're being aspirational, because those are very large deposits. But we know we have a big deposit up there that's very, very open, for additional growth. So the Red Mountain project is the focus right now. And what we're doing up there is really, number one, trying to grow it significantly. It's a large, and not to get too far into the technical details, it's a large what we call VMS deposit, what geologists call a VMS deposit, akin to things in the area, say like Greens Creek or Eskay Creek. That's very aspirational because those are very large and have been very successful mines for a very long time. But number one, we see the growth potential around it just by stepping out and drilling holes around where we already know there's good stuff. But also zoom out and on the entire property, we know that these types of deposits form in clusters, and there's lots of very prospective targets where we can see some interesting features on surface, maybe some high grade on surface that they just haven't been drilled. Which is like, okay, have we even found the biggest deposit in this area yet? Who knows? That's not something we're going to focus on this summer because we want to focus right on the deposits where we know they are themselves. But that's something perhaps for subsequent drill seasons. But bringing it back to what we want to do here and push this deposit forward, number one, we're stepping out and building ounces there, as aggressively as we can this summer. We think and hope that will support an updated resource, say within the next, 8 months or 12 months or something like that. And from there, we'll be looking to put out, an economic study like a PEA, or something similar. That can start to show the market, okay, like we have value here. There's good potential to mine it, and then really like continue the development of it from there. But in terms of when this could go into production, it's certainly, years away. But the value right now for us is number one, growing it, and number two, showing that it can be potentially profitably mined in the future. And that's really it.
Okay, so in terms of the silver price, if it stays above four, I personally, I'll just tell you what I think. I think we broke a 13-year trend, a 13-year resistance. I think we broke above 37, 25, I think it was 37, what, 40, whatever. It was from 2012, that was the last high. I think once we break above 40, I don't think we're going to go significantly below 40 in this dollar scheme. Again, I think the floor is going to be somewhere around 36, 37, where the resistance support, that's how it usually happens. I think this was the last break. So if silver trades around, let's say 50, 60 over the next year or two, which I think is totally reasonable, I don't think that's a pie in the sky assumption at all. Then where does that put silver 47?
Yeah, I mean that I think that analysis of price is very interesting. Like I also yesterday silver was breaking through 37 and today it's running again. Like I don't think that $50 or $60 silver, is crazy at all. And where does that put us? Okay, well let me just game this out in my head and think this out, with you in that okay, well then I think we start to see the generalist type investor come into this market. And say that type of person is allocating, I don't know, 0.1, 0.2, 0.3% of their portfolio to precious metals right now. What happens when they get back to what, a lot of people used to do, which was like 2, 3, 4% more than that, a little bit less than that in that neighborhood. In any case, it doesn't matter. We're talking about a 10x, increase potentially in investor demand for precious metals. Okay, well, like gold and silver. Right. There's lots of gold deposits out there, relatively, but there's very, very few silver-facing companies and deposits out there. We're one of them.
By
Put that
silver facing, you mean primary or prospective primary miners, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like whoever decided that they were going to put silver in the ground also decided that it would 90% of the time, 95% of the time go with other things,
Oh, you're talking about
gold.
God.
Being God isn't easy. You have to use a light touch, like a safecracker or a pickpocket.
Or a guy who burns down a bar for the insurance money.
Yes, if you make it look like an electrical thing.
All right, I'll
Yeah,
ask
yeah.
you.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
When you do things right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all.
So that's fine. So that's what I mean when I say silver facing. It almost always comes with other things.
Right.
But if you take our company and we just play that out a little more, well, like if I'm an American generalist investor, or if I'm just an investor in general, like I want to own things in countries where property rights matter, right? I want to own things in countries where I don't feel like it's dollars for dictators. And there's this really emerging investment theme in the last several years that, like, we need to be getting our important metals, I think much more domestically. And there's lots of great exploration potential in the United States and in Canada, especially in the United States, actually. But we haven't really we haven't really gone after mining here as much, I think, as we should. So that's a little bit of like philosophy, but also where I think investor demand is going. And then the last thing I just want to say on that topic is that a deposit like Red Mountain, we like it for the precious metal content, but it's also full of critical metals. There's seven critical metals in it. Zinc, antimony, gallium, things that, especially on the antimony and gallium front, that aren't really studied too well in this deposit yet, but need to be, and could be really good value drivers, value add, for it.
Do you know why antimony has the symbol SB? I never understood
I don't really.
that.
It must go back to Latin or something, though.
Yeah, okay, I'll look it up.
It must.
sorry. So my last question is just to sum it up for shareholders, potential shareholders. I do own some shares because you're a sponsor, and I only accept sponsors where I'm willing to take the same risks that you are, at least pro rata. Your risk is much more than mine, but I'll shoulder some of it. For shareholders, and they buy some shares, whatever amount they want to put in, they feel comfortable with. What can they expect? Just like hold on to it for the next 5, 6, 7 years until something happens. Like what should do you think they should expect from the stock? Because people are often worried about dilution with small miners, and it makes them nervous, and some people shy away from it for that reason. But why should people risk their capital on you?
That's of course like the most important question, and the dilution thing with small miners is something that we all have to really do our best to balance, because we want to add value for shareholders, right? And of course that takes additional investment in our projects. But for us, it's number one, we think we're undervalued relative to our peers. Number two, aggressive growth through the drill bit, going forward and advancing our projects. And then number three, looking for an additional potential partner to continue this growth strategy together. So, and then number four, I think put that at the beginning of a good precious metals market. And I think and I hope we're poised for success going forward.
All right. I will be following you. I'll be tracking all the news, and I'm sure I'll speak with you again soon. Good luck up there in Alaska. Watch out for the bears. Are there any walruses there? There could be. No?
No. This is in the mountains, so yeah, there are bears, but yeah,
Okay,
thank you.
and watch out for Putin. Don't let him cross.
Yeah, sounds good.
When you do things right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all.